Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here on the Mike Malloy Program. Hard to get in the mood of that song tonight, for me anyway. I've been watching too much of the coverage of the situation in Haiti. And like I mentioned last night, you get to a point where it's almost like the networks are getting involved in disaster porn. On the other hand, some of the footage of rescues, some of the acts of heroism being committed, being done by these rescuers from all over the planet are just astonishing. There is really something to be said about people who put themselves in that situation to help, you know, to go to a foreign country that's just had a disaster like Haiti has had, and to put themselves in great physical danger of losing their own lives to rescue people. To pull children and adults and teenagers out of this rubble against all odds. I mean, still, there are no bulldozers there. There are no dogs sniffing for living or corpses. It's devolving very, very rapidly. I think the best estimates are they have until tomorrow before real chaos ensues. But when I watch these people who commit these acts of absolute heroism, and then think about what is being said by right-wingers in this country, I swear to Christ, it makes me want to leave the United States forever. Because as long as we have people in this country, like Limbaugh, like the rest of these people, like the Steve King, I'm going to tell you something about Iowa's 5th District Representative Steve King tonight that is just disgusting. I don't know how this society, with our society, with its focus on it's alleged focus on Christian values, how this society could produce the kind of subhumans that are Beck and Hannity and Limbaugh and Robertson and Steve King, and the list just goes on and on. How does that happen? There have been acts of real heroism in some of this coverage. I think maybe, you know, my max out point was what triggered that comment last night about disaster porn. Maybe that's not it at all. Maybe the networks are trying to show how human beings can react in these horrible situations and come to the aid of people they have no connection to whatsoever, just because they are fellow human beings who are in such a horrible situation, and the rescuers come in from all over the world to help. It's astonishing to watch. If you've watched a lot of it, I'm sure you found yourself just tensing up today. Anyway, later on in the program tonight, we're going to have trivia at the bottom of the next hour, give away one free podcast subscription to a lucky Malloy listener, and a way to get good health insurance reform through Congress. And it has to do with the Democrats losing the Senate seat in Massachusetts. That might be a good thing. I'll tell you a little bit about that when we get there. But I've got to go through this. I was thinking today, is there any doubt left about the vile inhumanity of Republicans? All Republicans. I don't care how many mega churches they go to. I don't care if they send their little mission groups off to third world countries to dig holes for water. I don't care about that. Republicans, especially Republican office holders, and especially now, does anybody in this country have any doubt left about their inhumanity? In instance after instance, Republicans show they're not the same as normal people. They advocate war, and then they run and hide. I mean, even up to and including the President of the United States, the Republicans, they're cowards. Every single one of them. They advocate war, and then they hide. The horror of Katrina is now topped by the ugliness of vicious comments from filth like Pat Robertson, Beck, Limbaugh, Savage, all these people. And now, this 5th District Iowa Republican Representative Steve King has, in my opinion, taken the slimy mindset of Republicans to a new low. And I wonder, you know, I looked at a Google map and see the 5th District, I think, includes towns in Iowa like Orange City and Sioux Center and Storm Lake and Sheldon, Iowa. People who live in those towns, regarding what your representative, Steve King, said, I just have a question. Is this who you are? Does King really represent your feelings, your religious beliefs? You know what he said? He said, well, many activists and politicians have raised the cry for granting undocumented Haitians in the United States what is called TPS, temporary protected status. And I just heard on Rachel's program that that was granted today. Obama granted 200,000 Haitians who are in this country illegally temporary protected status. It's a long-standing part of U.S. immigration policy. And it's given to undocumented immigrants from a very small number of countries, federally designated countries, that have been suffering through armed conflicts or natural disasters or other extraordinary circumstances until conditions improve. Now, a lot of people in this country, on the progressive left, liberals, Democrats, socialists in this country, have claimed that Haitians should have received this TPS consideration after four consecutive hurricanes in 2008 left 800 people dead, hundreds missing, and made certain cities in Haiti uninhabitable. But here comes Representative Steve King, Republican from the 5th District of Iowa, who seems to think that not only were undocumented Haitians undeserving of temporary protected status back then, but undocumented Haitians living in the United States now, right now, today, should all be rounded up and deported back to Haiti to serve as, in his cynical goddamn language, relief workers? This is what he said to ABC News, quote, "This sounds to me, granting TPS, temporary, you dumb bastard, temporary protected status." He said, "This sounds to me like open borders advocates exercising the Rahm Emanuel axiom, never let a crisis go to waste." Steve King said in an email message to ABC News, quote, "Illegal immigrants from Haiti have no reason to fear deportation. But if they are deported, Haiti is in great need of relief workers, and many of them could be a big help to their fellow Haitians." End quote. You racist son of a bitch. You vile man. So, I have a question. I doubt if anybody in Western Iowa is listening to this program. Orange City, Sioux Center, Storm Lake, Sheldon. And I ask it again. Is this who you are? Is this the man that represents you? Your representative ignores the fact that Haitian immigrants could probably do a lot more to help rebuild Haiti by staying here and working. Do you know a third of Haitians rely on money sent from overseas? How many of those Haitians receive money from workers in the United States? Exploited workers, workers who work below the radar, who work for below minimum wage. And American employers who understand what they're doing hire people from Haiti, treat them like dogs, pay them less than they would pay other workers, and the Haitians have to put up with it. So by staying in the United States, these undocumented Haitians could generate income and send it back home, allowing these Haitians who are already here to legally work would help them to earn honest wages. And as thinkprogress.org said, they would send the money back to their families to get the country back on its feet. Relief workers are usually individuals who voluntarily donate their skills and their time and their resources to help victims of conflict and natural disasters. In other words, undocumented Haitians who are permitted to stay in the U.S. can provide relief. And if deported, like this piece of human waste Steve King is talking about, if they're deported, they're essentially forced into a situation in which they'd become victims who need more relief. I mean, it just turns my stomach to think that I live in a culture that has produced such decent people and then such swine, such scum as these Republican right-wingers. One, two, three. Sometimes it's nice to do what's right.
nice guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. The comments from Iowa's Steve King, representative from the 5th District, are just astonishing. But not as bad as Limbaugh. Limbaugh is at it again. Today he said that the horror of in Haiti and our response to it proves that the U.S. military is now nothing but meals on wheels. And that's always the case with a Democratic administration. In other words, that's what we do with our military. When Democrats are in control, we turn them into, in the pig man's words, meals on wheels. Wouldn't you like to take Limbaugh and put him in the middle of Port-au-Prince right now and watch as there was a scene in Suddenly Last Summer when Sebastian, Elizabeth Taylor's cousin in the movie, I forget her character, Sebastian, who was using Elizabeth in all her voluptuousness to attract these poor third world brown boys. Until finally the brown boys figured it out and they chased Sebastian down. You know what happened in the next scene? That's what Rush Limbaugh deserves. As a matter of fact, it's gotten so bad that film critic and writer Roger Ebert, remember Roger of Siskel and Ebert? He wrote a letter. It was in the Chicago Sun-Times today to Rush Limbaugh from Roger Ebert. You should be horsewhipped for the insult you have paid to the highest office of our nation. Having allowed President Obama's suggestion and donated money to the Red Cross for relief in Haiti, I was offended to hear you suggest the president might be a thief capable of stealing money intended for the earthquake victims. Here's a transcript from your program on Thursday. Justin of Raleigh, North Carolina. Why does Obama say if you want to donate some money, you could go to whitehouse.gov to direct you how to do it? If I wanted to donate to the Red Cross, why do I have to go to the White House page to donate? Limbaugh. Exactly. Would you trust that money's going to go to Haiti? Justin. No. Rush. But would you trust that your name's going to end up on a mailing list for the Obama people to start asking you for campaign donations for him and other causes? Justin. Absolutely. Limbaugh. Absolutely. That's what was said. Unlike you and Justin of Raleigh, I went to Obama's website and discovered the link there leads directly to the Red Cross. I can think of a reason why anyone might want to go via the White House. That way they can be absolutely sure they're clicking on the Red Cross and not a fake site set up to exploit the tragedy. But let me be sure I have this right. You and Justin agree that Obama might steal money intended for the Red Cross to help the wretched of Haiti? This conversation came 48 hours after many of us had seen pitiful sights from Port-au-Prince. Tens of thousands are believed still alive beneath the rubble. You twisted their suffering into an opportunity to demean the character of the President of the United States? This cannot have been an accident. A day earlier, a soundbite from your show went viral in which you said Obama would exploit the situation to, quote, please his black followers, both the light-skinned and the dark-skinned ones, end quote. Setting aside your riff on Harry Reid, consider what you imply. Obama will aid Haiti to please African Americans. Haiti has lost untold thousands of lives. One-third of the population has lost its homes. Countless people are still buried in the rubble. Every American president would act quickly to help our neighbor. You are so cynical and heartless as to explain Obama's action in a way that unpleasantly suggests how your mind works. You have a sizable listening audience. You apparently know how to please them. Anybody given a $400 million contract must know what he's doing. And that's what offends me. You know exactly what you're doing. Open letter to Rush Limbaugh from Roger Ebert. I just wonder how much longer rational Americans will allow this filthy son of a bitch to be on the air. How much longer? All of them. How much longer? How much longer will Americans allow a piece of human waste like Pat Robertson to identify himself as a minister of Jesus Christ? How much longer? when you have a cancer on your body that hasn't metastasized yet, if it's metastasized, you have a whole different set of problems. But when it's still a localized cancer or tumor, you excise it. You cut it out. And it goes into an incinerator in the bowels of the hospital where you had it removed. If Limbaugh and Beck and Robertson and Steve King and Hannity and Savage and the rest of these vermin, if they are in fact cancers in American culture, how do we respond to it? How does corporate America respond to it?
Till rush, rush to my sweet rescue. Now I'll never, ever have to think twice.
Never, ever have to think twice. So we'll sign a check for Limbaughism. Restore the moral fundamental core. We'll cut the debt and start a tet offensive on the poor. It's a mystery in the making.
Everybody!
It's distinctly upper class.
Well, not everybody.
Yes, sir, I'll get the door. Roll the carpet on the floor. For a man.
For a man.
For a man.
Such a man.
For a man. With his hand up his...
Ditto? Ditto.
Won't take second billing. I've got to be your number one.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the for the hour. Bob in Coos Bay, Wisconsin, Coos Bay, New York. Uh-oh. Bob writes, Mike, in light of the recent remarks elucidated by such cogent luminaries as Rush Limbaugh and Pat Robertson, I'd like to construct a simple but effective syllogism utilizing their own Christian mythology to put to rest, logically that is, once and for all, the insanity of their ideology. Premise one, embrace hate, the level and intensity of which this country has never witnessed. Premise two, divisivity and disunity. Premise three, lies and deception. Premise four, death, destruction, and the embracing of perpetual wars. Premise five, the absolute worship of the almighty dollar at the expense of life, livelihood, and the people's welfare. All of which, by their own mythology and the platitudes echoed for centuries by their own theologians and clergy, are the symbols of the fatherhood of their Satan conclusion. The party of conservatism is the party of Satan. Well, if you believe in that nonsense, I think it's the party of jackasses and illiterates and I don't know, people who just lost their ability to feel any compassion at all. You know, I sometimes wonder if Limbaugh's mother was trapped in a collapsed building and the military went to save her, I wonder if he would call that the Meals on Wheels U.S. military as a result of a Democratic president. You know, I always wonder about that. These people who, these right-wingers who have family, who have children, who have, it's hard to imagine, but who have mothers and fathers, what would their attitude be if their family members were in a situation like this? Would they be so worried they get bowel spasms? Would they be so worried and upset that they would choke? Waves of nausea roll over them? And what would happen if they found out that their mother or their father or their children had been crushed in an earthquake that they had nothing to do with causing? I just wonder. Something that's been missing from reportage. I've noticed it, and I wondered about it, and Dave Lindorf today answered it for me. The man is reading my mind, writing at commondreams.org. I was wondering, whether were reports of Cuban doctors, Cuban physicians have been sent around the world to help, not just in disasters like what we have in Haiti now, but in so-called third world countries where doctors are desperately needed. And some of the best doctors on earth have been educated in Cuba, which has just so pissed off 50 years of American administrations. The public health system in Cuba is one of the best in the world. That's why, even though they have been, the Cuban people have been walled off by the United States for 5 decades now, they still have astonishing ability to produce art and music. Castro is an aging dictator. Yes, he is. Nobody argues about that. But the Cuban people have managed all these years to keep alive the intellectual prowess that has always been part of Cuba, especially among their doctors, medical technicians, medical personnel. So where are the doctors from Cuba in Haiti? It's just we've flown over those two countries, Kathy and I and Molly. And when you look down from 38,000 feet, it's not very far between the island of Cuba and the island of Hispaniola. There are only 2 media outlets, according to Dave Lindorf, who have reported on Cuba's response to the situation in Haiti. One was Fox News, which claimed, wrongly, of course, that the Cubans were absent from the list of neighboring Caribbean countries providing aid. Fox News is a nest of vermin. Of course they would report it wrong, because they are sick bastards. The other reporting was the Christian Science Monitor, a respected news organization that recently shut down its print edition, Christian Science Monitor, which reported correctly that Cuba had dispatched 30 doctors to the stricken nation. And in a second article, the Christian Science Monitor quoted Lawrence Korb, former Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration, and now based at the Center for American Progress. Lawrence Korb is saying that the U.S., which is leading the relief efforts in Haiti, should, quote, consider tapping the expertise of neighboring Cuba, end quote, which he noted, quote, has some of the best doctors in the world. We should see about flying them in, end quote. As for the rest of the U.S. media, they've simply ignored Cuba's role and Cuba's actions. In fact, and here's the part that should jolt your back teeth. Left unmentioned is the reality that Cuba already had over 400 doctors posted to Haiti to help with day-to-day health needs of the poorest nation in the Americas, and that those doctors were the first to respond to the disaster, setting up a tent-style hospital right next to the main hospital in Port-au-Prince that collapsed in the earthquake. And as Lindorf says, far from doing nothing about the disaster, as the right-wing propagandists at Fox TV were claiming, Cuba has been one of the most effective and critical responders to this crisis because it had set up a medical infrastructure before the quake, which was able to mobilize quickly and start treating the victims. When you watch the coverage on television, have you noticed, because I've noticed it, there are people that seem to be physicians treating people. And all I hear, and no offense to these people, but all I hear the commentators, the white-skinned and some dark-skinned American commentators saying is that no relief can get in, nothing's there. People are, and that is 90% true. But when you see the doctors who are treating, those are Cuban doctors. Lindorf says the American emergency response predictably has focused primarily, at least in terms of personnel and money, on sending the hugely costly U.S. military. A fleet of aircraft, aircraft carrier, a factor that should be considered when examining that $100 million figure the Obama administration claims is being allocated to emergency aid to Haiti. Considering that the cost of operating an aircraft carrier, including crew, is roughly $2 million a day, just sending a carrier to Port-au-Prince for 2 weeks accounts for a quarter of the announced American aid effort. And while many of the military personnel sent there will certainly be doing actual aid work, delivering supplies and guarding supplies, many, given America's long history of brutal military and colonial control of Haiti, will inevitably be spending their time ensuring continued survival and control of the parasitic pro-U.S. political elite in Haiti. Otherwise, the U.S. has basically ignored the ongoing day-to-day human crisis in Haiti, while Cuba has been doing the yeoman work of providing basic health care. But that's not a story that the American corporate media want to tell. It damn sure isn't. So, if you had the same question I had, why have you heard not a word about Cuban medical personnel from nobody, not from Diane Sawyer, not from Brian Williams, not from anybody on CNN, not from anybody from CBS or MSNBC, swarms of American reporters down there. And some of the reporting, some of the video coverage is crucial in showing the courage, the decency of people who obviously are not Republicans, they're not conservatives, they're not swine like Limbaugh and Hannity and Beck and the rest of this group of thugs. But in all the reporting, not a word, not a word about 400 doctors, Cuban doctors, already in Haiti, trying to offer assistance on an ongoing basis. And then the sending of 30 more emergency medicine personnel to try to help. Not a word, not a sound. And that's disgusting. It's just disgusting. For the hour, thanks to everybody who told me it's Coos Bay, Oregon. Irish Dave says, Mike, the inspiration for jazz vibe master Gary McFarland's Coos Bay Blues. All right. I appreciate, I knew when I said Coos Bay, where's that? There would be an influx of emails. Thank you. Paul writes, Mike, regarding Satan, Mike, I contend that you don't have to believe in Satan or the Lord to believe that the Republicans or the right-wingers are the party of Satan. Satan is a concept, a representation, if you will, of evil, whether or not you believe in an actual satanic being. Sort of like Santa Claus. Even though there's no such person, you can see him everywhere at Christmas, and most of us know who he is, because even though the person doesn't exist, the concept does. Okay, yeah, that's good. Because I always say, you know, if there were such a thing, a creature as Satan, these people would be apostles of Satan. And they are. these right-wing Republicans, most Republicans, are just so filthy, just so vile. But it really comes out in situations like this, doesn't it? It really comes out. Attacking Obama, attacking people who have just been devastated. The is it the Red Cross or the government of Haiti, such as it is, have estimated now 140,000 dead, 70% of which have not been buried. And they expect the death toll to continue. Of course it will. And it can't escape notice. I mean, I try, like I'm sure you do, and I'll never succeed, at being colorblind. I can't. When I see somebody, the first thing I notice is their skin color. How could I not? Right? So, since that's a given, and it probably works the same way with people of color when they see a pale Caucasian. Same thing. First thing. Skin color. But I want you to think back now, okay? You're old enough to have seen lots of images of lots of stacks of corpses. And I'm sure someplace, somewhere, you would have seen this. But tell me where you've seen piles of dead white people. Think. I'm sure it's happened somewhere. Come on, everybody who emails me, because I can't I can't get an image of stacks of dead white people swelling in the tropical heat, or not swelling in the tropical heat. I think of Asia. I think of Central or South America. I think of Africa. I think of New Orleans. And I don't remember seeing stacks of white corpses. Anybody? Anybody? Can you think of one, Kathy? Stacks of white corpses?
The Holocaust.
Other than the Holocaust, yes. Other than the Holocaust. Can you think of any? Stacks of white corpses that are there as a result of a natural disaster, an earthquake, a hurricane, a typhoon, a tidal wave, a flooding. In all the images that I have, they're all darker skinned people. They have black hair. They have brown skin or beige skin or black skin or light brown skin. But when have I seen pictures, and I can't think of any, of fully clothed corpses of white people stacked up, where they're being used as barricades, where they're being ignored by the government? What government on earth has ever ignored dead white people? I can't think of any. Can anybody? Can you think of any? I can't either. And you know, there's a reason for that. Well, during the course of tonight's program, for as long as you stick around, if you can think of video footage or stills in the last 50 years from natural disasters, where the images were stacks of white corpses, Caucasian corpses, white children, white old ladies. Let me know. Because I've spent a better part of this afternoon trying to think, where have I ever seen this? Where? I know there were an awful lot of dead in the siege of Stalingrad, but that's, you know, that's war. I'm talking about where natural disasters occur and the result is tens of thousands of dead white people. I just can't. And then the corpses are just left out in the sun or left in the water, or animals start eating them whether it's dogs or alligators or raptors or, you know, whatever it is. I just can't imagine dogs eating off the face of a white man. Can you? Well, a little too graphic for the Malloy Show. Well, all right, we have a break here. We're going to come back and move on with the program. Sorry if this first hour was too intense for you. It's too intense for me, too. Stacks of white corpses. Think about it for a second, please.
Things
for each girl.
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Show. We're going to open up the phone lines in a few minutes. Three people have sent this to me from various parts of the country. And I want to share it with you. It's a letter to the editor that appeared in today's Minneapolis Star Tribune. It's a letter from Satan to Pat Robertson. And it says, "Dear Pat Robertson, I know that you know that all press is good press, so I appreciate the shout out. And you make God look like a big mean bully who kicks people when they are down, so I'm all over that action. But when you say that Haiti has made a pact with me, it is totally humiliating. I may be evil incarnate, but I'm no welcher. The way you put it, making a deal with me leaves folks desperate and impoverished, sure, in the afterlife. But when I strike bargains with people, they first get something here on earth. Glamour, beauty, talent, wealth, fame, glory, a golden fiddle. Those Haitians have nothing, and I mean nothing. And that was before the earthquake. Haven't you seen Crossroads or Damn Yankees? If I had a thing going with Haiti, there'd be lots of banks, skyscrapers, SUVs, exclusive nightclubs, Botox, that kind of thing. An 80% poverty rate is so not my style. Nothing against it, I'm just saying. Not how I roll. You're doing great work, Pat. And I don't want to clip your wings. Just, come on, you're making me look bad. And not the good kind of bad. Keep blaming God. That's working. But leave me out of it, please. Or we may need to renegotiate your own contract. Best, Satan." Woo! Lily Coyle in Minneapolis wrote that, I think. Yow. That's so true, isn't it? I mean, like my one emailer said tonight, Satan is, you know, is a concept. Japan. Have you heard what happened? We kind of miss this when they threatened to do this back in October? November? I don't mean threatened to do it. The Japanese government made a decision. And as it's being reported now by various news agencies from the East, Japan's Democratic Party-led government. Now, this is, let me digress, this is a new government, of course. The ruling Liberal Democratic Party, I think it was the Liberal Democratic Party that has pretty much ruled since the surrender in Tokyo Bay. Well, not since then, because we occupied and ran their country until when? 50-something? But this is the Democratic Party. Anyway, this new government, in an unprecedented decision, has ended its nearly 10-year-long refueling mission of the U.S.-led forces in Afghanistan. Incoming reports say Defense Minister Toshimi Kitazawa ordered all naval ships and their hundreds of personnel to return home, Japanese ships, to return home after 9 years of helping to supply oil to vessels used by foreign forces that are engaged in this controversial war in landlocked Afghanistan. Kitazawa is also expected to issue an official order that will totally terminate refueling operation in the Indian Ocean on Friday, today. Japan's Maritime Self-Defense Force has been refueling the U.S. mission since the Afghan War began in 2001. Reports say Japanese ships have provided more than 500,000 liters of oil to vessels from 12 countries, including the United States, France, Britain, and Pakistan, since last December. Japan has promised to change the old way things worked between Tokyo and Washington. The new Japanese government, which is against a military solution for what's going on in Afghanistan, has pledged up to $5 billion in civilian aid to Afghanistan. In addition, Tokyo's relations with Washington have been strained over a number of issues since Japanese Prime Minister Yukio Hatoyama took office last year. Diplomatic ties between Japan and the U.S. recently have witnessed a low over a previously signed deal to relocate an American base on Okinawa. The premier of Japan has suggested that the U.S. military bases should, all U.S. military bases, should be moved off the island of Okinawa or even outside of Japan altogether. Hatoyama says he will press for more equal ties with the United States. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean establishing a Japanese military presence in Puerto Rico? Hawaii? You tried that once, remember? No, seriously. The new Japanese government has decided that they don't want to be part of the war-making capitalism that is grinding people into dust and blood and bone fragments. So they've said, no, we're not going to do it anymore. And then there's this. I saw this today. It's from Syracuse, New York. And I just wonder how this became a story. The students at H.W. Smith School in Syracuse are upset with President Obama for answering an invitation to visit their school with a form letter. That's according to local television station WSYR. The children mailed the president a letter on November 13th inviting him to come help them build a snowman. They included a photo of the group and wrote about how building a snowman together would demonstrate unity and peaceful and peaceful living. The reply they received from the White House, dated November 6, a week before they sent their letter, was addressed to, quote, students, end quote. Most of the students said they did not expect the president to visit them, but they had hoped for something more personal than a form letter. Kiana Ferguson, a sixth grader at the school, said, quote, I was disappointed because I think his office could have done better than that, end quote. Simeon Greenberg, a third grader, added, quote, I felt disrespected. It was very disappointing to get that kind of response, end quote. The students decided to answer the White House with a complaint about its informal response and sent Obama another letter asking him to consider having his staff write personal responses to his mail. The students wrote, quote, if they wrote the letter we received as an answer on a test, they would not have a passing grade because they did not answer the question, end quote. The television report did not include a response from the White House. Come build a snowman with us and then get a form letter. Well, there you go. What further proof do you need that Obama was born in Kenya and he's a goddamn communist and he practices the Islamic religion, right? There's your proof right there. Past the hour, you know, the juxtaposition, mental images of seeing the huge U.S. Air Force transport planes landing at Port-au-Prince on the tarmac at the airport there, these huge C-130s that are bringing relief to the people who have gone through so much. I don't know how else to say it. And then one thinks about how many times the U.S. military has been used in Haiti to suppress, to overthrow, to coerce, to force into involuntary servitude would be a proper way to put it, to force into a kind of life that serves the corporate interests in America but did not serve the Haitian people. And I can't help but wonder how, amidst all this horror, unspeakable, hellish horror, the Haitian people who realize that Americans are landing to bring them relief this time. And yet in their grandparents' day, Americans arrived to bring them hell on earth. And I can't help but wonder, how do they deal with that knowledge? Haitians have that knowledge. Most people around the world have the knowledge of what the United States has done to them over the years when it's been bad stuff. We've done some good stuff, too, you know, I think. Oh, yeah, the airlift to West Berlin. But given a chance to stop the death camps in Poland and Germany during World War II, we decided to take a pass on that one. Even though we knew absolutely what was going on. Oh, well. I'm just a big old cynic about my dear, sweet homeland. You know, I just really am. Can't seem to get past it. Oh, somebody's calling in who wants to tell me that? Oh, God. Hey, Kathy? I don't want to put this guy on the air. I'm just not in the mood tonight. Tell him to kiss my ass and get him off the phone. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, don't bother tonight. If you're a right-wing freak, I just don't want to hear from you. I really don't. Talk about bashing America, you dumbass. Good Lord. But I just wonder how people in these countries that we have just brutalized, but bludgeoned. That's what General Smedley Butler, two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner, wrote about when he wrote War is a Racket. He wrote about Haiti. He wrote about Central America. And to the dumbass caller that I just told Kathy to get rid of, before you ever call my program, you moron, get some U.S. history in your head. Nah, never mind. Shut up. Go away. Anyway, regarding piles of white corpses, where are they? G. Roberts in Arizona writes, and the subject line, nowhere, Mike. He writes, we haven't seen it anywhere. Take it from a Hopi Indian. The whites create their own hell on earth. They don't get swept into the abyss by acts of the gods. They do it to themselves. The white world has made certain that they and their offspring live in houses that adhere to building codes. Houses built of materials most likely clear-cut from land belonging to brown people all over the world and shipped in at great expense. The brown people of the world don't have such things as building codes or, for that matter, indoor plumbing. Come out to Arizona and check out the tribal lands of the Hopi and the Navajo. It's not much different here than on the beaches of Indonesia, or the shanty towns of Brazil, or the flimsy cities and villages of Haiti. The whites seem to manage to gather to themselves the best of everything, seem to know in advance when the hurricane is coming, and have a car to flee inland. They seem to have some money to buy some food and get a hotel in the nick of time. How come brown people don't manage to do that? You already know. G. Roberts in Arizona. Well, if anybody can come up with something in modern times, I know the Black Plague in Europe, several times it swept through during the Middle Ages. But, you know, I'm talking about natural disasters. I guess that could be considered a natural disaster. But something in the past 50 years, piles of white corpses, if anybody can think of that. Podcast trivia when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Once again for podcast trivia on The Molloy Show here at 25 before the hour, where you can win a free one-year subscription to Molloy Show podcast downloads, commercial free. All you have to do is answer the question correctly. All right, Johnny, who's our first contestant tonight? Oh, my goodness, it's Ron in Tannersville, PA. Hello, Ron.
Hi. Hi, Mike.
Welcome to the program. All right, you ready to do this?
Sure.
Okay. During an interview with Katie Couric, the infamous interview with Katie Couric, Sarah Palin was unable to identify what? A, the capital of Iraq. B, who the Bush Doctrine was named after. C, a single Supreme Court decision other than Roe v. Wade. Or D, the drug she was taking when she named her children.
I think it was C.
C, a single Supreme Court decision other than Roe v. Wade. Oh, my! Very good, Ron. You got it.
Thank you.
Well,
thanks for the applause.
Yeah, well, the audience rose to its feet when you came up with the right answer. They're just...
But the reason I called, I was talking to Kathy about Cuba.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to thank you for bringing that up about the Cuban doctors. I actually have been to Cuba many times.
Mm-hmm.
And so I checked, for your listeners, they can go on the Granma is the newspaper of Cuba, and they can get that on the Internet. And that's where I went because I was concerned that I knew they had doctors in Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And I was concerned that someone might have been hurt, and I wanted to see if there was anything like that. But I don't know if anybody, if you know about the Medical School of the Americas, do you know about that?
I've heard about that, yes.
Yeah, where, you know, Cuba trains doctors for mm-hmm. free for all over Latin
right.
and Central America and all over the world, actually. And with the Haiti connection, one of my good friends down there, after she retired, people can retire at 55 in Cuba,
mm-hmm.
she went to Haiti to teach Haitians Spanish so that they could attend the School of the Medical School of the Americas.
Wow.
And, you know, she... And she was, you know, Cuba's a third world country, but she said she couldn't, you know, it was horrible. She just, you know, she couldn't wait to get back to Cuba. Mm-hmm. I said, why were you doing that? You know, why did you do that? You know, you're 55 years old. What are you going to? She says, it's my revolutionary duty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I wanted to bring up was, I don't know if you've seen this thing about some blacks in America have accused Cuba of having institutionalized racism. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't. I don't see how that could be possible.
And I wanted to actually bring this up sometime to Mark Thompson to see if he knows anything about it. But, you know, it's absurd. You know, this woman I'm just telling you about,
mm-hmm.
you know, she's darker than what, I don't know, Samuel L. Jackson, you know? I mean, she's...
Well,
her whole family, you know, was trained. She's a language teacher.
Yeah, I don't know from what quarter of what part of America that's coming from, but... institutionalized racism would be impossible in Cuba.
Yeah, it actually is, and there just isn't any racism there. I mean, it's just in that. And Ruby mm-hmm. Diaz was one of the names I saw on there, and who's that guy?
Well, if you find anything further, if you can send me a link,
I can.
Because I would like to know what American would be making such a jerkish, asinine statement as that.
Yeah,
if there's one nation that most Americans have heard of in the Western Hemisphere that does not have institutionalized racism, it would be Cuba.
Yeah,
of course, most Latin American countries that have a Hispanic ruling class, and I'm talking about Spanish, from the, you know, I'm talking about white Spanish, and you do find that in a lot of the countries that have been ruled by an oligarchy with support of the U.S. military or U.S. presidents over the past 150 years. Yes, you do find that, but Cuba is not one of those countries.
No, it's definitely not, and I was trying to figure out where it came from also.
Yeah, well, if you find something, let me know. As far as the Cuban doctors are concerned, You know, I mentioned to Kathy the other day, why is there no mention? I haven't heard anything about Cuban doctors going to Haiti. For God's sake, you know, from Cuba to Haiti is I don't know what it's like from Baltimore to Savannah. It's just not that far. And Cuban doctors are known worldwide as being willing to go anywhere to treat people, regardless of what their, you know, Cuba offered to send relief teams to New Orleans.
Yes, I know that.
And of course, the the pig bastard that was running this country and his little pig bastards, they all ignored it. And you can imagine for when those images of Katrina went out for days around the globe of just how dark-skinned people were being utterly, utterly, just absolutely ignored in the United States. I mean, that image probably did more to cement this putrid idea of what the United States is. Not that that brown people and any colored people can't come here and figure out a way to make money. Of course they can. But as far as the soul, this goddamn country doesn't have any soul. There's no soul here, Ron.
Oh, I know this.
There's nothing here. This is a collection of money-grubbing bastards who couldn't care less about the nest that they're befouling. What did I read today about, I forget where I read it, about Monsanto, the corn, the genetically modified corn that Monsanto has pushed globally. It's causing all kinds of organ failure in laboratory rats. And they don't know yet how it's going to affect humans, but these goddamn monsters at Monsanto, I mean, it just never stops.
Well, I appreciate your work. I did want to mention also, I think it was in 2008, Cuba was hit like by three hurricanes.
Yeah.
Really got hammered. The U.S. sent to Cuba, offered aid, $50,000.
Now, I'm sorry, I got distracted. Say that again. The U.S. offered 50 grand
to Cuba in the amount of $50,000.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
I mean, it was such an insult. I don't think they took it. I think.
No, of course not.
You know, they just said, what are you kidding me? You know, here they had millions of dollars, maybe billions of dollars of damage. But the thing in Cuba, all these hurricanes and things, no one gets killed. You know, they
prepare
they
for it.
They move the people out. They say it's coming, and they get everybody to safety. And very rarely do they have a death.
Right.
And you know, because they care about people, and so that's why I appreciate that you bringing this up, because most Americans, they don't have a clue about Cuba.
No.
What it really is.
They don't have an idea. My good friend in Detroit, Peter Werby, who still does a radio program on the weekends up there. He does a music show, but he also does talk radio. Peter, I think it's still peterwerby.com is his website. But he's made a couple of trips to Cuba. I can remember back in the 70s, I almost went with the Venceremos Brigade out here in Atlanta. And I forget why I didn't go, but I was working for a radical left newspaper here in Atlanta. And they would organize trips to help with, I mean, just the stuff you would imagine back in the 70s, the sugarcane harvest or whatever. And I desperately wanted to go and wound up not going for some reason. I don't remember. But Werby has been there several times. And every time he goes down and takes his pictures and comes back, it's just, you know, eventually I just really want to go there. Like I said, we've overflown Cuba, I don't know, three or four times. We've made trips to Puerto Rico. And I would love to go to Cuba someday, maybe. Hey, listen, Ron, hold on now. I'm going to put you on hold. Kathy will get the pertinent information for your podcast subscription.
Thanks for all you do, too. Thanks for this show.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for tuning in. Take care, Ron. Hold on. Don't go away. Don't go away. All right. Well, we'll wait till the next hour. I want to get to this thing about, you know, the Kennedy seat, Senate seat in Massachusetts. It looks like it may go to a Republican. And the word is, you know, that this guy, white guy, he's running against a white woman. I think she's what, the treasurer, secretary of state of Massachusetts? I don't even know. But This guy is the Republican guy is being backed by the Teabag Insanity Party, and he's already said if he's elected, he will vote no on this crappy ass health care reform or health insurance reform bill that's working its way through through Congress. And Brent Budowski today, writing at The Hill, has a pretty good idea about why it might be a good thing if Massachusetts does go Republican and all hell breaks loose with health care reform. And I'll share that with you after the top of the hour, because I thought it was a pretty good and I'll explain to you then what this process of reconciliation, what that means, where it concerns a bill like this health care bill. All right. Not that you need my explanation, but, you know. All right, break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. A group of clerics in Yemen, prominent Muslim clerics in Yemen, are warning that they will call for jihad or holy war if the U.S. send troops to Yemen. As you know, that's the next place that President Obama is going to place an overt official contingent of U.S. soldiers or Marines, according to reports. This comes from the Associated Press. A group of 15 clergymen, the group of 15 clergymen who warned made this warning today, includes the highly influential Sheikh Abdul Majid al-Zindani, whom the U.S. has branded a spiritual mentor of Osama bin Laden, but who is also courted by the Yemeni government for his important backing. Isn't that where the bin Laden family is from Yemen? The cleric's warning goes straight to the Yemeni government's dilemma in cooperating with Washington against an al-Qaeda offshoot in the country. The cleric said in a statement, quote, if any foreign country insists on aggression and the invasion of the country or interference in a military or security way, Muslim sons are duty-bound to carry out jihad and fight the aggressors. Obama has said he does not plan to send American combat troops to Yemen. Right. All indications are that we already have troops in Yemen. I don't think Barack Obama is any different from any other president, given certain circumstances. The function of government is to lie. It always is to lie. That is its first obligation, is to lie. So, one more area of the world where we can really make our presence known. And of course, we're back on the Arabian Peninsula if we do this. I don't know if in the Muslim faith, Yemen is considered part of, since it is part of the Arabian Peninsula, And the Arabian Peninsula contains the two holiest sites in Islam. If that would constitute a violation of placing foreign troops to defile these holy sites. This is the madness of religion, of course. It's the utter madness of religion. You know, this is a place where someone floated to heaven. This is a place where a snake started talking to Eve and said, hey, eat the apple. This is the place where Moses raised his staff and the Red Sea parted, but only temporarily. This is the place where Lot's wife turned around and looked back and became a pillar of salt. Oh, well, I'm going to piss off the believers. Again. All right, where are we? Oh, yeah, okay. Tim is in Jacksonville listening on XM. Hey, Tim.
Hey. I'm a new listener to your show, and I do enjoy your show, although I usually disagree with a lot of what you say. But
well, cool. That's fine. Why do you listen?
That's what makes it fun, really.
I'm just curious. Why do you listen?
Because I like to listen to the other people, because it's more interesting to hear people cheer for whatever you think you already know. You know, I like to hear. I like to give you a chance to convince me. But I'm not really calling for anything.
Oh, wait, I'm just curious. What would you like me to convince you about?
Well, I really want to respond to what you said a little while ago about the where white people's bodies piled up. I was going to mention the earthquake in Oakland '89 had a pretty good body count.
How long did the corpses lay on the street and bloat up, and how often did the dogs come and eat their faces?
Well, that has to do with the fact that our infrastructure...
Well, that never happened, Tim. You know.
Well, it happened
to people. No. Excuse me. It never happens to white people. White people do not lay on streets. White people are not left out for animals to come and eat their faces off. That doesn't happen to white people. That only happens to brown people, or black people. Now, what is it that you think I might be able to convince you of?
Well, I wanted to correct the facts you gave out a little while ago in part of your
argument. You can't correct facts.
I want to give you facts.
You can only correct statements.
Well, you're
okay. What? Which one?
Wrong statement. But that way.
Which one?
In World War II, you said that about the concentration camps, that we did nothing about it.
Right.
I wanted to mention that. Well, you know, by 1941, when Germany was already into Russia and invaded the whole continent of Western Europe. It would have been, you know, a pretty neat trick for the Americans to even be able to get into that part of the world, considering we already had a military capable of doing that. No, these are facts.
Tim, I'll put you on hold. I don't like motor mouths like you. The U.S. government of FDR was requested many times by Jews, by... official state representatives of other countries to send the bombers into Poland and Germany and blow up these death camps because of what they were doing. I think you obviously have had your head wrung out completely by right-wingers, and I would ask you not to call the program again. I don't like people like you, Tim. I just don't like you. I don't like talking with you. I don't like being in the same room with you. I just don't like it. And when you call my program, you wind up in my headphones. And that's very unnerving to me, because you know why? Because it feels like you're in my head. Son of a bitch, Tim. I don't want you in my head. Go away. Welcome back. It's 6:30 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. A couple of emails here before we crank it back up, because I do want to do this thing that Brent Budowski wrote about. This is from Big D, who writes, Mike, the problem you and many of the listeners have when trying to understand the likes of Rush, Robertson, Beck, and other conservative rap bastards is that they are sociopaths. A sociopath does not have the capacity to feel. The bank execs have the same mindset. You can talk till you are blue in the face and they will not understand what you're talking about. I finally learned that when confronted with a sociopath, keep moving. Big D, and then he's got a PS on here, but I don't think I can say that on the air. Big D. No, I acknowledge and recognize that these scummy bastards are sociopaths. I know that. I've been saying that for years. They're filth in addition to being sociopaths. And I understand that a sociopath has no connection to anything outside of his own ego. That's where he lives, everything. There's no id, there's no superego, there's nothing. It's just ego. And I don't mean ego in the sense of some high school girl saying to her friend, you have such a big ego. That's not what I'm talking about. Butter7 is as pissed off as I was by that freak that called me from Jacksonville. Butter7 writes, Mike, the 1989 earthquake wasn't in Oakland, as your caller said. It was in Loma Prieta. I was in downtown San Francisco about 20 floors up when it happened. And after the building stopped swaying, we could look out over the ferry building and see the part of the Bay Bridge that had collapsed. In any event, the caller is completely wrong about bodies laying in the streets in Oakland or elsewhere. As I recall, there were few deaths, maybe a couple of people in the Bay Bridge section that collapsed. Lots of property damage, windows blown out, structural damage, but few deaths. I walked home once they let us out of the building, walked through the center of the streets to avoid the glass from the shattered windows. Lots of glass, other problems, but no dead bodies. The guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And for the record, for months after that, many professionals, particularly engineers I worked with, told me they could not get over the terror of the earthquake. Some were drinking a whole bunch. Some were taking sleeping pills, anti-anxiety drugs. Some were talking about moving away from the area. It was terrifying. That's a part of the coverage of this disaster in Haiti that we probably will never hear, because nobody really cares about poor people being terrified or suffering psychological damage that would destroy most of the rest of us. Give them some food and water, and then tell them to pull themselves up. Yeah, that's an excellent point, isn't it? Psychological damage to brown people? What? What, do they have a psychological? Oh, it's awful, man. In watching some of the video footage coming out of Haiti, and looking as intensely as possible at the faces, I don't mean necessarily the faces specifically on camera. You look at the faces of the people who are walking, or who are sitting, or wailing, or screaming, or the children, and you see it. I mean, it's there, that the incredible damage, permanent, that's done inside their heads. Even if the physical damage is reparable, the damage inside the heads of people, whether it's in Oakland or Haiti or Banda Aceh, it doesn't make any difference. That damage is there forever. And who addresses that? How many Haitians will wind up going to their local therapist and getting a script for, oh, I don't know, Valium or something? What's used now? Not Valium. Xanax. Yeah, how many Haitians will, you know, go to the psychologist's office, or the psychiatrist's office, I should say, and show their insurance card and get some Ativan. Doctor, I can't sleep at night. I have this memory. Oh, here, my good fellow. Here's a prescription. Take it down to your friendly Walgreens and get it filled. Yes, doctor. One question. What? what they say, Walgreens. You know, that kind of stuff. All right. Brent Badowski writing at The Hill today. If Massachusetts goes Republican, he's talking about the Senate race to replace the late Ted Kennedy. If Massachusetts goes Republican, all hell breaks loose with health care. And that might not be a bad thing. He says, he writes, what happens if the Republicans win the Senate seat in Massachusetts? And might it have the ironic result of reviving the public option and other progressive policies around health insurance reform? Brent writes, here's a scenario I advise senior Democrats to consider if the Republicans win the Massachusetts Senate race. One, obviously Democrats don't have the 60 votes any longer. Two, the president's first inclination will be to persuade Senator Olympia Snowe, Republican of Maine, but I do not believe this can be achieved, which would require moving the Senate bill that she opposed even further to the right and toward the special interests without losing more liberal members than the market can bear. If we assume the hypothetical premise that Massachusetts goes Republican, the political and psychological damage to Democratic morale will itself lose a few votes, regardless of the 60-vote issue. Even most Democrats can be surrendered out, and I predict any Snow scenario fails. Three, which leaves reconciliation. Reconciliation. The strategy of passing key progressive positions with a majority vote. A majority vote. This eliminates the need to turn the bill into an eBay auction with payoffs and surrenders to the handful of senators needed to get to 60. They are no longer needed. You take back the giveaways. The surrenders are canceled. The Democrats will have the 51 votes for a far better and more popular bill. The public option lives again. The Dorgan Amendment survives, allowing import of safe, lower-priced Canadian drugs that will save the budget $100 billion. The bill can make insurance price-fixing, price-gouging, and collusion illegal. After all, we can ban discrimination on pre-existing conditions in a way that bans price-gouging against those who get this insurance. And on and on and on. Now, how do we do it? Brent wrote a lot more, but first of all, I don't know until today. I didn't know what reconciliation really is. What the hell are they talking about? You know, it just seems to me that 51 votes is all you need, but then, of course, you have the filibuster thing that's nowhere in the Constitution, you Republican sons of bitches that are always whining about the Constitution. There is no such thing in the Constitution, huh? Nor is there reconciliation, for that matter. Reconciliation is a legislative process intended to allow a contentious budget bill to be considered without being subject to filibuster. Because reconciliation limits debate and amendment, the process empowers the majority party. Reconciliation also applies to the U.S. House, but since the House regularly passes rules that constrain debate and amendment, the reconciliation process represents less of a change in that body. So let's stick with the Senate. Under the administration of President George W. Bastard, I'm sorry, I misread that, George W. Bush, Congress used reconciliation to enact three major tax cuts for the wealthy. These tax cuts were set to lapse after 10 years to satisfy what is called the Byrd Rule, put in place by Democratic Senator Robert Byrd. The Byrd Rule. Efforts to use reconciliation to open the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling failed. I'm going to tell you when we come back what the Byrd, Senator Byrd Rule is and how reconciliation is the only way to go here. Somehow I've lost my mind, but I'm not crazy, I'm just a little unwell. I know right now you can't tell, but stay a while and maybe then you'll see.
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're talking about reconciliation, how to get a health insurance reform bill passed, much better than this piece of legislation that is being considered. And this can all happen if the Democrats don't just wet their pants and run screaming into the streets if they lose the Kennedy seat, so-called, in Massachusetts. And the idea is to use reconciliation, the process that allows the bill to be considered without being subject to filibuster. Now, the Byrd rule, named after Senator Robert Byrd, was adopted in 1985 and amended in 1990 to outline which provisions reconciliation can and cannot be used for. The Byrd rule defines a provision to be extraneous and therefore ineligible for reconciliation in six cases. Here they are. If the provision, the bill, does not produce a change in outlays or revenues, which the health care bill would. If it produces an outlay increase or revenue decrease when the instructed committee is not in compliance with its instructions. Now, I know this is gobbledygook. But this health care bill does not do that. If it is outside the jurisdiction of the committee that submitted that, it's not outside the jurisdiction. If it produces a change in outlays or revenues, which is merely incidental to the non-budgetary components of the provision, it does not. If it would increase the deficit for a fiscal year beyond those covered by the reconciliation measure, it does not. If it recommends changes in Social Security, it does not. Now, those are the six provisions necessary to have a bill considered through reconciliation. Now, any senator can raise a procedural objection to a provision believed to be extraneous. Like a Republican can say, wait a minute, this is extraneous. And it will then be ruled on by the presiding senator, who would be a Democrat. A vote of 60 senators is then required to overturn the ruling. Well, that will never happen. Even if it's a Republican, I don't know how it works in the Senate. Maybe a Republican can sometimes be the presiding president of the Senate. But it would take 60 votes to overrule. No, wait a minute. I think it's just a Democrat. Anyway, reconciliation. Now, reconciliation has been used a million times. The Reconciliation Act of 1980, the Budget Reconciliation Act of 1981 and 1982, the Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act of 1982. 1983, there was another one. Deficit Reduction Act in 1984. The Consolidated Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of 1985. Then there's one in 86, 87, 89, 90. Who is president during these years? Huh? Bush and Reagan, or Reagan and Bush won. And then there was the Budget Reconciliation Act of 1993, and then one in 1995, 97, 97, 99, 2000, 2001, 2003, 2006, 2006, 2007. The reason I mention all that is when this idea starts to gain steam, these filthy, disgusting, smelly Republicans are going to start to say, oh, wait a minute! Can't do that. We never did that. These are the sons of bitches that invented it. Okay? And they have used it all through Reagan and Bush years and into Clinton years, when Clinton did not have any power in the House or the Senate, except that he ginned up by playing one side against the other. And usually Clinton worked the side of the Republicans. So there's a way to do it. Now, Ezra Klein, writing at American Prospect, also weighs in on this. He says, the beauty of the reconciliation process is it restores the primacy of the up or down vote. The time for debate is unlimited, or in the regular order, which is to say the Senate's customary procedure, the time for debate is unlimited. And if a minority of 40 senators refuses to stop talking, then you need 60 of them to invoke the rule that shuts them, the rest of them, up It allows the bill to come to vote. If you don't have the 60 votes to break the filibuster, it doesn't matter if you have 51 votes to pass the bill. You see? You see how sick that is? The reconciliation process, wait, we got a break here. The reconciliation process, by contrast, limits debate to 20 hours and bypasses the filibuster altogether. It was instituted to ensure that minority obstruction couldn't block important business. But it was misused by the Republicans. At least Robert Byrd thought so. He saw all manner of extraneous amendments and legislation sneaking beneath the radar. So what he did was add the Byrd rule, which I read to you a second ago. So, the Democrats, the party of power, instead of standing around peeing all over themselves about a Republican winning the Senate in Massachusetts, what the Democrats should be doing is just figuring out the proper way to introduce real health insurance reform, rewrite the bill, and put it in under reconciliation. The deal's done. We go home, and the Republicans can go eat dog doo-doo.
Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malone.
25 before the hour. Okay, back to your phone. Did that make sense? I hope it did, about reconciliation. The language is fairly arcane and ridiculous for common folk like moi and possibly you. But the objective is very clear. And that is to prevent the kind of garbage that these filthy, stinking Republicans are doing, and some Democrats, in order to stop real health insurance reform. This would put the public option back. This would get everybody's ass out of the way of a woman's right to privacy. The white males, Democrats and Republicans, can you say Bart Stupak, who are stuffing their faces where they don't belong. It would also levy heavy penalties against this predatory insurance industry if they even thought about this disgusting term that some son of a bitch came up with called pre-existing condition. What does that mean? When you're born, you have a pre-existing condition because you're going to die. So, well, I mean, what? And usually your death is going to be one caused by sickness or disease, the kinds of things that may or may not be treatable. But the insurance companies who have been taking your money all of your life, or somebody's money, to insure your life against these health disasters, all of a sudden they just say, oh, wait, I'm sorry. The son of a bitch had a pre-existing condition. Ha, ha, ha. We get the money. You get the coffin. You get the point. So again, it requires the Democrats. You know, I had a wonderful idea for Obama and he completely ignored me. He must not have been listening the night that I offered it. The way to get Obama off the hook with all these filthy, murderous wars that are creating ever more enemies for us is to just to have asked Congress for a declaration of war and then the proper funding against Afghanistan. But no, he wouldn't take my advice. And I offered a solution to the economic crisis, nationalize five key industries. But no, he wouldn't take my advice. Okay, last bit of advice. To hell with Massachusetts Senate race. It doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, the country would be better off at this point to let it go to the Republicans. You know why? Because then the Democrats would have to start thinking. Instead of bargaining away every single bit of this health insurance reform bill that might have benefited us. But while Republicans are filthy, murderous, amoral sociopaths, Democrats, the ones working on this bill, are cowards. Flat out cowards. And if they're not cowards, they have been bought off by the health insurance industry. So is there any possibility that out of 100 senators, there are just 51 of you? Just 51 of you. See, this way you could tell Joe Lieberman to go shove a sharp stick up his rear end. You wouldn't have to mess with him or Stupak or Nelson or any of these people. And you wouldn't have to go hat in hand to poor old Olympia Snow. Hi, it's us again. Forget Massachusetts. What's going to happen over the weekend? Isn't Obama going to go up there to lobby or campaign on behalf of the Democrat who wants to take over the Kennedy seat? And it is a Kennedy seat. I mean, come on. And the Republican running was featured in Playboy with his hand over his, or Playgirl with his hand over his crotch. I mean, Jesus. But he's a favorite of the teabagger crowd. Oh, yeah, because you know why? Because, well, when I get elected to the Senate, I'm going to vote no on this health insurance reform. It's bad for America. It's bad for people of Massachusetts. It's bad for my constituents, which are the health insurance industry. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So Obama's going to go up there and lobby and waste more of his diminishing political capital. And it doesn't matter. Forget it. And then in every single bill that comes up, make it somehow be a budgetary bill. That way you can put every one of them through reconciliation and we can get back to what the Senate is supposed to be. A simple up or down vote. Do you want this?
Yep.
Do you want it?
Nope.
That simple. This crap with these Republicans, these filthy little sociopathic bastards. Can you imagine what the Democrat, if the Democrats use the filibuster was the threat when they got re-control of the Senate, then we will use the nuclear option. What's that? Well, I don't know, but goddamn it, we'll use it. Remember all that talk? The nuclear option was what? Reconciliation for everything? Was it changing the Senate rules? They should be changed. Will one of you Republican snot noses tell me where filibuster is in the Constitution? Don't bother because you can't. Pigs. Kurt is in Los Angeles.
Hey, Mr. Malloy, how you doing?
I'm all right. Call me Mike.
Oh, okay, Mike. Hey, wow, man. I am so glad I discovered you tonight.
This
is my first time calling in. I've heard listened to you before, but first time calling in.
Yeah.
And, I was about to recommend that you spread some of this knowledge to the White House, but I just heard you say you've already given them two other suggestions, and it didn't seem like Obama was listening to you. But
yeah, nobody listens to advice from radio talk show hosts unless it comes from the pig man, Rush Limbaugh. Then the suckers listen, don't they?
Yeah, that's totally unfortunate. But
yeah, it is.
Reason I'm calling is because I'm not sure if you're familiar with Miss Rhodes, who's on earlier on the out here on. On 1150 out here in California.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know who Randy Rhodes is. Yeah.
Yeah. I placed a call on her today because she basically was going through all the years and decades of the greedy mishaps of the Republican Party.
Uh-huh.
And I shared a couple of things with her, one being the GOP, to me, does not stand for grand old party.
Yeah.
It stands for greedy, omnipotent people. And if there's no money to be made, they won't get involved. And if someone else spends money to get something done, they'll obstruct it.
Mm-hmm.
And to solidify my point, as I started watching the Haiti crisis go down, one of the first problems was that there was no heavy equipment,
right,
to move, you know, in and start getting these heavy blocks of concrete off of people. So I thought to myself, well, where in the hell is Halliburton and KBR? Because when it was time to rebuild Iraq and Afghanistan and other parts of the Middle East, they were right there getting multi-billion-dollar contracts to go in there and reindustrialize those oil-rich nations.
Well, they'll show up. There is too much money to be made in a disaster zone. But they're just waiting for the Marines to go in and make sure that none of the Halliburton people are going to get blown away the way they have been blown away in Iraq and Afghanistan and other places where they put their predatory fingers. So they'll show up. They'll be there.
No, but wait, though. But they're not even sending money, though. I actually called them.
Called
because
who?
You don't have to. Yeah, I called them yesterday.
Who?
Halliburton.
You did?
Yeah.
And what'd you say?
What did I say? Well, the first person that answered the phone was the receptionist, and I inquired, and I said, you know, has Halliburton provided any financial assistance or will be providing any type of industrial equipment to help with the crises in Haiti? And the lady, she's quiet for a moment, and she said, maybe you need to speak to this other person here, you know, blah, blah, blah. So they put me on hold.
Right.
So I waited a couple of minutes, and someone came to the phone and said, so-and-so is not available. Can I help you?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, yeah, I'd like to know what, you know, will you be doing to help with the crisis in Haiti? And, you know, do you plan on providing assistance, money, something to support, you know, the cleanup? And I got the same response. Followed by, who are you? Well, where are you calling from? Everything but, yes, we're going to help. And so finally they told me I should call KBR, which is their spinoff, you know, the construction portion of Halliburton that broke off.
Mm-hmm.
But I just found it really, really interesting that, you know, they hadn't even pledged any type of money to help get things rolling.
Kurt, I've got a break here, but the thing to remember, Halliburton, Keller, Brown & Root, and these other predatory companies, Bechtel, what have you, they're not interested in helping. They're interested in squeezing every bloody dime out of a broken and disaster-struck nation that they can. Trust me, they will be there, but they'll be there when they figure it's safe and they can do their looting and stealing without too much attention.
They ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, 'cause I am a patriot.
Ten before the hour, let me mention our crew, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kate Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Catherine Bay, who produces the program and tries to keep all the gears meshing properly. John is in Fayetteville, Arkansas, listening to XM. Hey, John.
Good evening.
Hey.
The evening shows that I checked yesterday, one of them, I don't know if it was Democracy Now!, Laura Flanders, one of those shows, picked up the fact that both Venezuela and Cuba had contingents of doctors on the ground doing work before the Americans even assessed the situation, and before the first American help arrived, they had already treated over 800 patients. Of course, that's just in the drop in the bucket for what's there, but both Venezuela and Cuba were right there to help.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing, Naomi Klein spoke about how within 14 hours after the quake itself, Heritage Foundation already posted a plan for a true shock doctrine type exploitation of the situation and making some big bucks out of it. So she was making a plea that any help we give them be in the form of grants and not IMF loans.
Oh my God. I'm not surprised about Heritage Foundation. And yeah, I agree. It should be something that the Haitians get that cannot be taken away by these filthy right-wing corporations or any organization that would try to exploit it. And they're out there, as Naomi Klein has pointed, out, disaster capitalism is just a wonderful business for these people.
Well, I feel kind of somewhat guilty by association because my state has a senator that helped to subsidize a lot of crops that drove thousands and thousands of Haitians off their farms, out of business, and into poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing in Haiti the end results of globalization. It's kind of like the book Flat Broke in a Free Market by John Jeter.
Mm-hmm.
Shows what happened to Zaire and the fact that we basically, the free trade just simply robbed them of what little wealth they had left, and that's very advanced in Haiti.
Yeah, it was Clinton who bowed to the corn industry in this country because of this horrible substance that's out there, corn sweetener, that is going to kill every goddamn American who eats it eventually. But in order to satisfy that lobby, Clinton, in effect, with globalization, utterly and absolutely destroyed the sugarcane industry in Haiti, right down the toilet. And nobody cares. This is, you know, you're right. This is globalization. This is the end result. Mexico was the first step. You might say Vietnam is the second, and Haiti is the third.
All right. Have a good evening.
All right. Well, I appreciate you calling, John. Take care. Ah, oh, Lord. I just, sometimes to finish up the program, I'm not sure exactly what to do. This is a quick email here from Sharon in Madison regarding piles of dead white people. I'm like, I think there were quite a few dead white people produced by the Serbian-Bosnian conflict. Wasn't the term ethnic cleansing? Muslim Serbs ridding themselves of a pesky, growing Christian population, rounding up all males, shooting them and pushing them into pits. What about Algeria, Albania? Maybe there are not enough photographs. Would racist Americans think any of these people were technically white, quote, quote? Maybe not. I think you may have to drink Budweiser, love Jesus, wear your cap backwards to qualify. Sorry, all of this makes me think seriously about leaving this strange, eternally adolescent, obnoxious country. Sharon, remember the qualifier I had on the piles of dead white people? It couldn't be a war or whatever, the Bosnian, Serbian, Slavian, whatever it was. Oh, my God. Seems like a million years ago. However one wants to identify that conflict. I'm talking about, yeah, white people kill white people. Oh, my God, yes. I mean, look at how many millions died during the second half of World War I, which we laughingly call World War II. How many white people died in that one? What I'm talking about, though, are the piles of corpses that are always present when there is flooding and hurricanes in Bangladesh, when there are earthquakes in Tashkent or wherever, when there are violent storms and tidal waves and hurricane hits New Orleans. When you look at the pictures that are out there in media, on television, video reports, internet reports, iPhone reports, what you see whenever you see piles of dead bodies or bodies being used as a roadblock, what you see never are piles of white bodies. It's always, always piles of dead bodies. And somewhere deep in the recesses of a white Caucasian mind, there has to arise the question, why is that? And then if the question gets asked inside the Caucasian mind, I wonder if the Caucasian would then have the honesty to seek an answer, a real answer. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin, wherever you are.